Hi, Blind Cool Tech listeners. My name is Corinne, and I used to record the House Audio Description podcast. I recently quit the House podcast and replaced it with two new audio description podcasts, one for Alias and one for Modern Family. After this short intro, you will hear the first podcast episodes of both. For more information and for the new podcast feed links, please visit www.audiodescriptionpodcast.com. That's www.audiodescriptionpodcast.com. I hope you enjoyed the new podcast and thanks for listening. My email address and the website link will follow at the end again. The following Alias episode is about 1 hour and 42 minutes long described. The normal Alias episodes are a little shorter, about 1 hour long described. If you want to skip to the Modern Family one, fast forward this track to about 1 hour and 43 minutes. Welcome to the Alias Audio Description Podcast, Season 1, Episode 1. Pilot. Sydney, wearing a red wig, is being drowned. Then someone yanks her out of the water and starts speaking Chinese. Two men in military uniforms throw her into a room. The room is dimly lit, and there are no subtitles for this part on the DVD. One of the men pulls her upright and shoves her onto a chair. He hits her face.
Amnesty
不會來救你的,羅社會已經開會記號的了,你今天來,打黃金的你,誰派的你?
The other man cuffs her to the chair. At the metal clanging noises, everybody looks at a wooden door at the far end of the room, and Sydney looks very afraid. The door opens and there's a grey-haired professor entering the room, except this is the next scene, and this room is a very beautiful high-ceilinged library where there is a row of tables and students are taking an exam. The professor checks his watch and starts retrieving papers from the handful of students that are still there. Sydney is one of them, and she is still writing.
Sydney, time's up.
Okay. Then I'll just finish my little essay. Thank you.
So
so I'm pretty sure I got a D.
You didn't get a D.
I think I got a D. I think I got like a 64, maybe.
Sydney and her boyfriend Danny are walking on the sidewalks outside of the university. Danny, who is wearing a white lab coat, is rummaging through his bag.
Sid, you've never gotten a D.
I've gotten a D.
When have
High
you got?
School, home ec. Remember the...
Oh, yeah, what did you do? Embroider something on a T-shirt.
Sweatshirt, was the assignment.
Oh, wait, it was obscene, right, about the teacher.
That guy was a sexist pig. I deserved a scholarship for that.
Wait, hold on
this
a
This time, I deserve a D. I didn't prepare. I didn't have enough time.
But we've had this conversation. Quit the bank if the part-time thing isn't working.
What are you doing?
Danny looks frustrated as he kneels down and opens his bag, trying to find what he's looking for.
Can't go through double shift again, holding on to this.
Sydney kneels down next to him.
Did you get the Dave Matthews tickets?
You stand up, Liz. I wanted to wait, maybe do it at the weekend, but I couldn't.
What's going on?
Remember our first date? Bowling alley. The loud guy.
Oh, guy.
Build me up, buttercup, baby, then you bring me down and mess me around. And
they are on quite a large grass field in front of the university. In a corner of the field, there are about 15 to 20 people practicing martial arts with kind of plastic swords. And there are a lot of other students walking around, and everybody is looking at them and stops what they're doing.
And then worst of all, you never call, baby, when you say you will. But I love you still. I need you more than anyone, darling. I know that I'm yours from the start. Build me up, buttercup. Don't break my heart. Shut up!
Sydney, I can't tell you how much I hope you'll marry me. Despite what I just did.
He is kneeling in front of her, holding out the box with the ring.
Yes.
They kiss.
Every damn thing. Hold on.
At Sydney's apartment, her red truck is parked on the driveway.
Oh, let me see it again. Oh, honey, it's beautiful.
I know.
Francie and Sydney are looking at the ring.
Getting married.
So did you tell Will yet?
Meeting him at the track after the bank if you want to come.
Yeah, no thanks. I got 300 orthopedic surgeons to feed and no desire to exercise. What about your dad?
I haven't told him yet. I don't want him to ruin this. Not this, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. I think if you call him, he's just gonna find some way to let you down.
Yeah, I know.
Your mom would be so happy for you. You know that?
She would. Maybe I should call my dad. I mean, he is my dad.
You are schizophrenic. Just remind yourself. Unless you're talking about importing airplane parts, that man's got nothing to say. Let him find out when he gets the invitation.
It's exporting airplane parts. He already knows. Danny called him to ask permission.
Danny called your dad?
Your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that go?
Danny is standing in the hospital hallway, and he is on a payphone.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Bristow.
Yes.
Hi, it's Danny Hecht.
Sydney's boyfriend.
Jack Bristow is sitting at his desk.
Is Sydney all right?
Oh, yeah, she's fine. Nothing to worry about. I'm calling because I'm planning on asking Sydney to marry me.
And I was hoping to get your approval. Danny, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
How well do you know my daughter?
We've been dating for 2 years.
Because if you feel the need to ask me about this scenario, I have a sense you don't know Sydney at all.
So I love your daughter, and I want to marry her. That's why I'm calling.
First of all, Danny, the truth is, this is just a courtesy call. Like when you say to your neighbor, We're having a loud party on Saturday night, if that's all right with you. What you really mean is, we're having a loud party on Saturday night.
Mr. Bristow.
Sydney doesn't give a damn what my opinion is. What interests me is that you do.
It's just a custom to call the father. That's all this is.
Well, then, I'll tell you what. I may become your father-in-law, and that's just fine. But I will not be used as part of a charming little anecdote you tell your friends at cocktail parties, so they can see what a quaint, old-fashioned guy Danny really is.
Danny is looking increasingly uncomfortable.
Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Good. Then welcome to the family.
Sydney crosses the street and walks past a black sign that reads Credit Dauphin. She walks through the bank and into the executive elevator.
Hey.
You're in late. Sorry.
The guard in the elevator stops someone else from entering.
Executive elevator.
Oh, come on, man. Drop me off at 12.
The guard opens his jacket to show his gun.
Hi, damn.
Zachary feeling better?
Much. Yeah. Thanks.
Sydney takes her engagement ring off behind her back. Sydney walks out of the elevator into a small wide room. There only is a dark, large circle painted on the floor. Sydney stands in the center of the circle and a red laser body scanning light flashes up and then goes out again. Another door opens and Sydney walks into SD6. It's a large concrete room with several pillars and a lot of people in suits behind desks and walking around. Sydney drops her bag on a desk and walks up to Dixon, who is on the phone.
Titka chera laila mispar haze. Shaktazor mikufinja. Dunatem pigisha imjibil. Shalom. God, I hate this.
We were just saying if only Ramadan and Bala Salah were still teaching in Tampa.
No, not my casework. These new headsets keep pinching my ear.
Oh, give it to me. Any word from Declan?
Not since Tehran. I keep telling myself he's just fine. You know, he's done this before. He disappeared for days like this. What's going on with you?
Nothing, what?
You're like, you've got like a glow.
You don't have a glow.
Yeah, look at that.
Here, come on, Sloane's waiting. There's no glow.
Is she glowing?
Big time.
You hear that?
Dixon tries on the headset that Sydney adjusted. Sydney walks away from him and throws her arms in the air.
Yes. Better. Good.
Oscar Mueller was killed last month. He was riding a moped through Berlin and was hit by an ambulance, of all things.
In the SD6 boardroom, there is a large table with computer monitors on it. Dixon and Sydney are staring at monitors, and Arvin Sloane is standing up, pacing around and briefing them.
We have kept our eye on this guy for quite some time. He fancied himself a sort of modern-day alchemist. His IQ was recorded as one of the highest on the planet.
Then again, he was riding a moped.
Between the multinationals, there was a frenzy to recover Mueller's notebooks and experiment, but none were found, at least not by the West.
The boardroom is empty, except for Sydney and Dixon, and opposite them, another man is sitting staring at a monitor, and this is Marshall, the tech guy.
Cultural Affairs Building, Taipei, Shinseng North Road, Section 2.
The computer monitors show a satellite view of part of Taipei.
This building is also an FTL cover station. We received word 2 weeks ago that one of Mueller's plans surfaced here.
Who's the mole?
Antonio Quintero. This is his last transmission. Uplink was on the 15th. Brush pass was scheduled for Tuesday.
Sloan presses a button on his remote, and the computer monitors change to a scanned image of a sketch of a device.
Quintero did not show.
What is that, hieratic?
Good try. That's what I thought. Actually, it's demotic.
The demotic script they are referring to is what is scribbled around and below the sketch of the device.
Taking notes in ancient languages was just one of Mueller's quirks. Apparently he had a few.
So Quintero's been burned?
We don't know. Cultural ambassador is throwing a reception at the building's annex next Tuesday. You're flying to Taiwan on Monday. You're employed by Modera Plastics.
Sloan hands Dixon and Sydney their airplane tickets and other information.
Looking for a new manufacturing plant.
Based on Quintero's notes, you'll case the building's east wing. Measurements, lock specs, IO, the whole nine. Locate the lab where the plans are being held and come home. That's all. No retrieval. We can't risk it. That's all. Okay, Marshall, you go.
Thank you. Okay.
Marshall stands up, and as usual, he's a little fidgety.
Yeah, how's everyone? Good. All right, the first thing I have here is...
Marshall takes a little plastic bag out of his pocket and takes an object out to show it to them.
Hey, well, it looks like a lighter, right? And it's something that you would, you know, light your cigarette or cigar or something. But actually, it's an RF scrambler. It disrupts any video for a 420-yard radius. So if I were to hit this switch right here, the whole block would you know, be in a complete panic. So what the hell, right?
Marshall flips the switch, and all the monitors in the boardroom turn to static.
See, everyone's totally freaking out. It's like, what's going on? My computer, it's not... DVD is not working. And we're back. Okay.
Marshall flips the switch again, and everything returns to normal.
Now, I got a 20-volt cell in here, so you only get 4 minutes of charge. So, you want to get in and, you know, do a thing and get out 4 minutes and 2 seconds, and you're screwed, you know. The other thing I got here is...
Marshall digs through his pockets and takes out another plastic bag with an object.
Hey, you're going to like this. One of my, there's something that I'm really excited about. Looks like a lipstick, you know, something that you be in the do for your lips, you know, in the woman's refresh or something. But
Marshall uses the device as if he's putting on lipstick.
This is the amazing thing. It actually takes pictures, and it measures space in three axes from one vantage point. It assembles images based on GPS and creates a centimeter accurate blueprint of any building, but that's not... it's got a camera and a short pulse laser plus a grid analyzer. I got it to 42 snaps right now, but I want to get it to 47 because that's a prime number.
Well, you might think this is a simple reconnaissance op, but until we find out what the hell happened to Quintero, we need to assume that the enemy is waiting.
Sydney and Dixon were smiling as a result of Marshall's demonstration, but now they turn serious again.
So I want you to do us a favor. Come back.
Sydney and Will are working out, and they are running on an outdoor track. Sydney stops, and Will catches up and stops next to her.
Good run.
Thanks. So, where were you last night? How'd you?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. My sister set me up on a blind date.
Was it good?
For the date it was, yes.
You didn't like her?
I didn't like her so much, I don't like my sister anymore. That's the problem, having siblings live with you. They try to get you to meet people that you aren't supposed to meet in life.
Why would the date so bad?
Your favorite movie of all time. You ready for this? Pretty Woman.
So? I'm sure it's a lot of people's favorite movie.
Yeah, that's probably true. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Of all time, that includes, like, every other movie ever made.
They stop on the grass in the center of the track, and Will hands Sydney a bottle of water, and she takes a drink.
Hey, all of them. Oh, hey, did you see Lawrence of Arabia's playing the Gypsy tonight?
Yeah, I did.
You want to go?
I'd love to, but...
Danny's working late, right?
I'm taking him dinner at the hospital.
We can go to a late one.
Will takes off his shirt and starts changing into a dry one.
Come on, it's only playing on Thursday.
We're getting married.
Look at that, you're wearing a ring. I didn't even see it. That's... Congratulations.
Thanks.
You want to get a couple more laps?
I am done.
Okay, because I'm going to get a couple more.
Will runs away. Sydney is laying on the couch in her living room and she's reading a very big book on demotic script, and it kind of looks like Egyptian hieroglyphs. Behind her, Danny is studying at the table.
Open my eyes, I realize this is my perfect day.
They look at each other, smile, and Danny walks up to Sydney. He bends over, they kiss, and he lays on top of her on the couch.
Called Todd. They haven't rented that place yet. If you want to go look at it.
Danny unbuttons Sydney's shirt and starts to kiss her belly.
It's impossible, isn't it? One day, there's going to be a baby in there. My patients would love that, knowing that their doctors still can't believe women can actually get pregnant.
Sydney looks worried. She stands up and reaches out her hand, inviting Danny to follow her. Danny takes her hand and follows Sydney upstairs. As they walk past the stereo system, Sydney turns up the volume. They're in the shower and Sydney starts to undress.
Get undressed.
Danny very quickly obeys. He joins Sydney in the shower. He starts to kiss her, but Sydney stops him.
I work for the CIA. I'm an operations officer for the CIA.
This is shot from out of a different room looking into the bathroom, and you can see Danny and Sydney fighting with each other, arguing behind the glass door of the shower. Danny angrily walks out. Back to the wooden door from the first scene. It opens and a man in a suit comes walking into the room. He's wearing circular glasses. Sydney, still wearing the red wig and still wet from the attempt to drown her, looks at him as he sucks up some orangey fluid from a vial into a very large syringe. The man with the glasses slowly approaches Sydney. He holds up the syringe and lets the air out. The wooden door closes, and the man injects whatever is in the syringe into Sydney's neck. The two men in military uniforms are holding Sydney down.
Okay. Come to the gate. Come back here!
Sydney and the man in the glasses look at each other, and Sydney is fighting the sedative. But the sedative wins, and Sydney goes unconscious. The man with the glasses and the two uniformed men walk out.
I have seen your face and it's too much for me.
It was during the fall of my freshman year.
A younger Sydney is studying outdoors near the university, and a man in a suit approaches her and hands her a card.
A man approached me. He told me that the U.S. government might be interested in talking to me about a job.
Shot of Sydney reading in the library with her back against the wall.
When I asked why me, all he told me was that I fit a profile.
She's looking at the business card the man handed her.
So won't you be kind?
I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere, even at college. And I needed the money anyway. So I met with him.
Shot of Sydney talking on the phone.
And they offered me a job.
Trouble.
Back to real time. Danny and Sydney are talking on a hill in front of a pump jack.
A job with the CIA.
Not exactly. It's a covert branch.
This is crazy. Okay, so covert branch, then what?
After the first month, I asked if I could test for agent training.
Shot of Sydney filling out a form.
The test was easy. They said I was a natural. Maybe I was, because I advanced too quickly.
Shot of Sydney training in hand-to-hand combat and on a shooting range, firing a gun.
It's exciting.
This isn't real.
Danny. Since my mother died, I've always hoped that I'd find someone to give my life meaning. That person is you. I just met the agency first. I can't quit.
Sid, I love you. But this... I've just got to figure out what I'm thinking.
You can't tell anyone about this. About what I do. No one. Danny, I'm not kidding.
I got it. I need to walk. I'll call you tonight.
I've got my trip.
Trouble. San Diego.
Trouble. I'll call you when I get back.
Be careful. I don't want no fight.
A plane lands in the background and Danny walks away. Then a different plane in the sky and Sydney and Dixon are on that plane. Dixon is reading his notes and Sydney is reading a book.
You know, Sloan doesn't like it. That you're still in grad school.
I know. He'd rather none of us have a life outside. I'm not giving it up.
You all right?
How long have you and Diane been married?
11 years. No, 12 years. Damn.
You love her?
Of course I do.
And you never said a thing.
About what?
About what we do.
Diane is married to an investment analyst who loves his job. I'm protecting her from the truth.
And you don't feel like you're lying to her?
If there's one rule you don't break, that's the rule you don't break.
It must just get easier.
Sydney turns her attention back to her school book, and Dixon just keeps looking at her for a while, and he frowns. Shot off a busy intersection in Taiwan. This is a very big Taiwanese mansion with a stone wall around it, and there are a lot of limousines parked in front of the gates. Couples are getting out and they're entering the mansion, and the camera follows one of them inside. There are armed security guards and there's a red carpet leading indoors. Inside there's a very large hall with small round tables where people are sitting, standing and talking to each other. I think there are around 200 or 300 people and there's a live orchestra playing. The camera swerves through the crowd and stops at a small round table where Dixon and a high-ranking Taiwanese man are shaking hands. Dixon excuses himself and walks up to Sydney, who is wearing a glittery long red dress, and she's talking to another man. Both are holding champagne glasses. Dixon starts talking to the man, giving Sydney a chance to walk away. She walks past the small table and puts her champagne glass on top of it. Then she walks out of the room. The camera shows Sydney walking but stays focused on another guy, which is the man with the round glasses who in the beginning of the episode was torturing Sydney.
Hey, this is Sydney.
Yeah, and this is Danny. I don't live here.
Danny is standing in a dimly lit bar. He's talking on the payphone and he's drinking.
Leave me a message and I'll call you back.
Thank you. She meant to say thank you.
You're not there. Well, no, you're not there. You're not there. Or in San Diego.
Back at the reception in Taiwan, Dixon starts to look a little shaky and he reaches in his pockets for his pills.
Chila.
Then Dixon goes completely rigid and he keels over backwards, hitting his head quite hard on a chair. Back to Danny in the bar.
You could be anywhere doing anything.
Sydney is running through the halls of the mansion and she runs up to a guard, pointing in the direction of Dixon.
Which is the crux of the issue.
As the guard rushes away to help Dixon, Sydney sets the stopwatch on her watch to 4 minutes. Sydney slips past a thick red rope that's blocking the stairway and she walks downstairs. And back in the main hall, Dixon is laying on the floor. Several people are helping him. There are about 150 small pills scattered around him. And he flicks open the lighter that Marshall gave them. In the security guard's room, all the monitors turn to static.
Hey!
Can I live like this? Knowing where? Why?
Voice over of Danny, but shot of Sydney downstairs in the mansion, and she uses the lipstick to take a 3D photograph of the hallway. This is shown by a red laser grid lighting up.
When?
In the main room, someone hands Dixon a glass of water. Sydney is still making her way through the hallway. Two of the doors are locked and she continues her way and takes another 3D picture.
Can I live in the dark? And the answer... The only answer I came up with, Sid, was...
The stopwatch now shows 3 minutes.
Was yes. Sid, I don't care. The whole world's a nightmare anyway. It's all dangerous no matter what we do.
Sydney is still running through the hallways and she comes at a T-section at the end of one hallway. She carefully peers around the corner and there are two people in the other hallway, but they are walking away from her. They're both wearing lab coats and one is carrying a box.
I couldn't live with myself. I'm saying goodbye to you because of risk. It's all a risk. Hey, no, but the kids thing. That we have to talk about because I want kids.
Shot of Danny in the bar and then a shot of Sydney's answering machine in her apartment.
I love kids.
Shot of a whole row of, I think, radio antennas that are transmitting the call.
See, maybe there is a way out because people aren't spies forever.
Shot of a computer monitor and the screen reads acquiring telephone call at the top and below that there's a waveform running.
At some time, people have to be able to say that they used to be spies.
A window reading comparing voice print pops up and then a picture of Danny shows. There's a man sitting behind the computer and he yanks off his headphones and picks up the phone.
I miss you, Sid. Come home.
Sydney is running down the stairs, and since all the signs in the hallway are labeled in Taiwanese script, I can't read them. But she stops in front of two large metal doors, and there's a keypad on the side on the wall. There is a lockpick hidden in the high heel of her shoe, and she takes it out and starts to pick the lock. The stopwatch reads 2 minutes and 24 seconds. Sloane is sitting in his office and he picks up the phone.
Yep. Who? What else? Yeah, well, get me the audio right away. Yeah.
Sydney has picked the lock and opens the door. The room Sydney has entered is a large concrete warehouse kind of room, and there's a fence in front of part of it, but the door in the fence is open and Sydney walks through. On her left there are quite tall cardboard boxes. They read Berlin and Luften. Luften is not a German word. Maybe they meant Lufthansa. And there are quite a few tables in the room with devices on top. And Sydney uses the 3D camera to take a picture. Then she turns around and notices the box with Berlin, and she re-enters the room. Sydney walks past a few pillars and turns left, and then she stops at a table on top of which is the device that she saw sketched on the monitors back at SD6. It's a device that consists of two C-shaped metal things. One of the C's is mirrored and they almost form a circle, but there's a gap in between. And there's a bunch of circuit boards and metal wires attached to them. Sydney takes a picture of it, and back in the main room, a doctor is shining a pen light in Dixon's eyes. The stopwatch is now counting down from 9 seconds. Sydney is running up the stairs. Time's up, and the monitors turn back on.
Hello, you can open that.
And one of the monitors now is showing Sydney where she's not supposed to be. They radio a message to the man with the glasses, who walks to Sydney, and Dixon looks worried. Sydney is still running upstairs, and when she finally reaches the last one, which ends at the red big rope, the man in the glasses is waiting for her.
I'm so lost. Oh my god, I was looking for the bathroom. You know, there really should be signs. I mean, in English, I don't know if you're in charge of that, but...
Sydney smiles at him, adjusts her dress and her boobs, and tries to walk past him, but he stops her.
This area is restricted.
Please, I was just going to the bathroom. Look, you don't know my boss, Ron, but if he found out that I've been drinking, then I'd gotten in trouble. I swear to you, I will lose my job. I swear it.
Sydney is almost crying.
Restroom is this way.
Thank you. Bless your heart. I don't like your tie.
Sydney makes a quick exit, and the man with the glasses smiles and adjusts his tie.
We have a breach. It appears that Daniel Hecht has become aware of Sydney's affiliation with the agency.
At SD6, Sloane is sitting behind his desk, and he's got a file in front of him.
You understand what that means.
He slides the file across the table, and someone who's sitting opposite him takes the file. That someone is Jack Bristow.
Yes, I understand. I appreciate you telling me yourself.
I'm sorry, Jack.
Don't be. You know me well enough. You know where my loyalty lies.
At the airport in Los Angeles, Dixon is met by three SD6 agents.
Mr. Gonzalez.
Mr. Dixon, where's Bristow?
Looking for this.
Looking for her. Where is she?
The man takes the 3D camera lipstick thing from Dixon.
She left me at the gate.
Left you at the gate.
Said she was grabbing a taxi. Why? What's the problem?
Hey, I'm back. I didn't even go home first. I took a cab.
Sydney enters her apartment, and it's completely trashed. There's broken furniture, broken glass everywhere. She drops her bag, takes a few steps, and drops her keys. She drops her other bags and walks into the bathroom. Danny is laying in the bathtub. There's blood everywhere and he's been murdered. She kneels down next to him and carefully touches him. And she is silently screaming. Sydney's scream turns into the screeching of tires as she is driving really fast to SD6. Sydney is briskly walking through the offices of SD6 and she's a mess. She's crying, there's blood on her clothes and on her face, and she's quite disheveled. She stops in front of Sloane's desk.
What did you do?
I might ask you the same question.
Sloane presses a button and the door closes behind Sydney.
Security section became aware of the breach and performed their function. You're familiar with the codes of conduct, Agent Bristow. You knew those codes applied to you, even as you put at risk the lives of every man and woman working at this agency.
Sloane walks around his desk and stops in front of Sydney. Sydney sits down. She's still crying.
Danny wasn't a risk. He was just a man. He was a doctor. He was just...
You listen to me. Information about this agency must be treated like a virus. There is only one response to a virus, and that response is containment. You put us into a compromised situation, and even though I despise that countermeasure, we have...
Sydney grabs Sloane's jacket with both fists and pushes him down on his desk.
Agent Bristow, you didn't.
No.
lets go of him.
Let me out.
Sydney, I can't imagine how difficult this is for you.
Let me out.
However, before you go anywhere, Bacala needs to see you. See, you're a risk now, too.
Are you an operative of SD6?
In McCullough's office, he's interrogating her, and Sydney is hooked up to a lie detector and several other monitoring devices.
Yes.
How long have you been an operative of SD6?
7 years.
What is your identification and classification number with SD6?
Identification and classification.
Have you ever been so entertained by the cleverness of a crook that you hoped he'd get away with it?
No.
Did you reveal information regarding SD6 to Daniel Hecht?
No.
Do you ever lie?
What
is your relation to Daniel Hecht?
The covert branch of the CIA.
Do you believe if a person is arrested for stealing
and
several others have helped him,
should
reveal his helpers?
Yes.
McCullough stands up and walks out. Sydney looks from out of the office into the main SD6 workspace area, and McCullough is talking to Sloan. Sydney is reading Sloane's lips. I can't read lips, so I don't know what he's saying, and there are no subtitles. Sydney is slowly walking out of the bank, and then she stops. Her car is being towed.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Sydney, wearing the red wig, is handcuffed to the chair and she's waking up.
I don't know what you put in that stuff. Wow.
The man with the glasses is sitting opposite her.
I'd rather not make this too painful.
Me too. Thanks. Glad we're on the same page. It's good.
He stands up and bends closer to her.
Whoa. Who are you working for? I'll not ask you again.
Okay. Get a pen.
He sits back down and gets a ballpoint and a small notebook out of his pocket.
Write this down. E M E T I B. You got that?
Yes.
Okay, now reverse it.
I hate to state the obvious, but it now reads, bite me.
I've got bad news for you, man. I am your worst enemy. I've got nothing to lose.
One of the guards hands the man with the glasses his toolkit.
That's not exactly true. You have teeth.
At first, it's not quite clear what the rattling sound is, but when the next scene appears, it becomes quite clear that it is from the mechanism that rotates and lets the coffin get lowered into the ground. This is outside on a cemetery, and it is Danny's funeral.
These questions resonate even louder.
Francie is sitting next to Sydney and she puts her hand on her arm. Sydney is holding a white rose.
But we hear them, echoing in our minds. Why?
At the end, everybody stands up. And they hug and cry and say their final goodbyes.
When the night shows, the signals grow on radios. All the strange things, they come and go as early warnings. Stranded starfish have no place to hide. Still waiting for the swollen Easter tide.
Jack is watching from a distance from inside his car.
There's no point in direction. We cannot even choose a side.
Indoors, family and friends are talking and eating and drinking.
Took the old track, the hollow shoulder across the waters.
Will's sister Amy is there as well. She is about Sydney's height and she has bright red hair.
On the tall cliffs, they were getting sons and daughters.
Will is talking to, I think, his sister's son, and he's showing him a magic trick. Then Amy walks up to them, hugs him, and takes the kid away. I think the boy is about 7.
We're jaded underworld was riding high. Waves of steel at the sky.
Sid and Francie talk and hug.
And as the nails sunk in the cloud, the rain was warm and soaked the crowd.
Later that night, Sydney is home. She is sitting in her bedroom and she is drinking wine. She presses a button on her answering machine.
Hey, this is Sydney.
Yeah, and this is Danny. I don't live here.
Leave me a message and I'll call you back.
Thank you. She meant to say thank you.
We will say goodbye to flesh and blood.
Sydney picks up the machine and changes the message.
Silent in any still alive.
Hey, this is Sydney. Leave me a message.
Gave their
thank you.
To survive. Drink up, dreamers. You're running dry.
She loved a man and she lost him. This isn't a new theme in literature, but it seems to be one of the favorites.
In the beautiful library hall where Sydney previously was taking a test, the professor is lecturing.
For instance, what does Tennyson contribute to this subject? although his work is mildly out of fashion at this time, I would like you to consider his exploration of this theme.
The room is filled with students. Sydney is one of them, and her beeper goes off. She checks the screen, and it reads, Sloan, 911.
It seems that, it seems to be...
It's in the upper quadrant!
Outside the university, the weather is quite nice, and Sydney is walking to her car and rummaging through her bag.
Sid!
Sydney stops, and Dixon gets out of his car.
Need a lift?
No, thanks. I'm just going to the library.
How have you been?
They hug.
Okay. You?
Good. Better. Thanks for the flowers. It was nice.
Look, Sloane's getting impatient. They gave you a month off. It's been three.
I've talked to Sloane.
Yeah, apparently not to his satisfaction.
I know they sent you here to bring me back. I'm sorry. I just can't yet.
They got word. FTL's finished building the Mueller device. Sloan wants it.
They don't need me for that op.
They say they do.
Tell them to call Quintero.
Quintero's dead. We got confirmation Thursday. Sid? They need you active. And if they don't have confidence in someone who's in as deep as you are, they'll fix that problem.
Sydney kisses his cheek.
See you.
Sid.
She walks away. At night, outdoors at a restaurant, Sydney is drinking tea. There's a happy young couple in love sitting opposite her, and Sydney looks sad. Sydney is walking in a parking garage on level C5. She gets her keys out of her bag and gets into her red truck. She is about to put on her seatbelt when she notices a red laser dot on her side. Just in time, Sydney dives to the side, and there are two men with automatic guns, two cars to her left. Sydney starts the car, puts it in reverse, and steps on the gas. The gunmen block her in, and Sydney scrambles out of the car. Sydney is running through the parking garage, and one of the gunmen chases her. The other gunman chases them with the car. Sydney stops at a door that leads to the tower elevator. It's locked. She continues running. She hides behind the car and listens. She takes her cell phone out of her bag. Francie is standing in the kitchen and she's cooking.
Hello?
Francie, hi.
Oh, honey, do you want to hear the worst day ever?
Listen, could you call my cell phone? I think the ringer's broken.
Sid, I can barely hear you.
Just call me right back.
Okay.
The gunman on foot runs towards the sound and only finds a cell phone on the floor. Sydney ambushes him. Sydney strikes between his shoulder blades and he kicks her in her stomach. Sydney throws him on top of the hood of a car. He rolls off, the fight continues, and he yanks her arm behind her back and pushes her on the hood of the car. Sydney grabs the antenna and snaps it into the man's face. Sydney then throws him into the side of the car, and when he's just about getting up, she kicks him and his head hits the glass window, which breaks. He's out cold. Sydney grabs the gunman's gun from the floor, spins around, and points it at the driver of the car that screeches to a stop in front of her.
Get in!
Daddy?
The other gunman is in the car and he's approaching fast. Sydney grabs her cell phone and jumps into the car, and Jack drives off.
Dad, you have a gun!
Hello?
Yeah, it's working. I'll call you later.
I tracked you a couple times. Just call me back. You are not going to believe the day I had.
Me too.
Hang on.
Dad, what are you doing?
Jack one-handedly, he's holding a gun in the other hand, puts the car into a controlled 180 spin. He puts the car in reverse and he's now facing the car of the driver that's fast approaching them, and he is firing at him. Jack hits the driver and kind of parks his own car. The driver, who I guess is already dead, crashes into another parked car. Sydney and Jack drive out of the parking garage onto the road. Jack is still driving very fast.
There might be others. Put your seatbelt on. You're going to have to accept that there are many things you won't understand tonight. The one thing you must understand is that the agency doesn't trust you anymore, and they're going to kill you unless you do as I say. I work for SD6, just like you, undercover at Jennings Aerospace. You leave tonight.
I've arranged a flight to France with a connection to Switzerland. You'll be red flagged at customs, so I've given you new papers.
I thought you sold airplane parts.
I don't sell airplane parts. I never sold airplane parts.
Jack parks on a remote and empty parking lot. There only is one other parked car.
That car's taking you to the airport. I have to get back. They're not going to know.
Who are you?
Sydney, get in that car. They're only waiting 2 minutes. Then they leave, with or without you.
Sydney pinches Jack's cheeks, checking to see if it's really him.
There is no time for you not to trust me. You don't know who you're dealing with.
What does that mean? Who the hell am I dealing with?
About a decade ago, a pool of agents went freelance. Russian, Libyan, Chinese, Ethiopian.
The Alliance of 12.
What do you know about them?
They're an enemy of the United States. They're mercenaries. They're dangerous.
I'm one of them. SD6 is not a black ops division of the CIA. SD6 is a branch of the Alliance. You work for the very enemy you thought you were fighting.
It's impossible.
Then tell me why you've never been to Langley. You've been lied to. All lower-level agents have been lied to. But I am trying to help you here.
So you're saying I'm working for the enemy? And that you are the enemy?
Sydney, this is your last chance. You have to go.
Who are you to come to me and act like a father? If you want to help me, stay away from me.
Sydney gets out of the car and runs.
Okay. Let's try one more time.
Back in Taiwan, the man with the glasses reaches for one of his tools and he walks up to Sydney, whose mouth is being held open by a metal device. Kind of like a small version of what horse dentists use to keep the horse's mouth open.
Who do you work for?
He nods to one of the uniformed men, and the device is removed so Sydney can talk. She stretches and moves her jaw.
I just wanted to say, start with the teeth in the back, if you don't mind.
The mouth-opening device is inserted again, and the camera slowly moves out as the man with the glasses approaches. At the newspaper, Will's job, Jenny, his assistant, is collecting mail.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me the newspaper's doing you a favor. Yeah.
Jenny hands Will his mail and he hangs up the phone.
Do you want a pantry run? You want anything?
No, thanks. Is Liz back in our office?
What do you think?
Does she even work here anymore?
Hope not.
In with Will's mail is a note and it reads, I'm on the roof. S.
Put that on the third page.
Meet me on the roof? It was perfect, though. Some guy just totally hung up on me.
Will meets Sydney on the roof, and as he walks closer, he notices a bruise and a scratch on her face.
Should I get like an hour until you want to get some lunch? What happened to your face?
I need your help.
Sydney, you okay?
Yeah, I can't even explain it, so don't ask it. You just gotta trust me.
Of course.
I need to borrow one of your sister's credit cards with at least a $3,000 limit. I'll pay her back. Can you get it?
So what is this? We owe somebody some money?
There's something else. Do you know where Amy keeps her passport?
Sydney is in the woman's bathroom in a gas station, and she is dyeing her hair bright red. She picks up Amy's passport and uses a small black marker to put a black dot above the lip of the woman in the photo, and then does the same with the black marker on her own skin by looking in the mirror. Sydney is walking through the airport. Her hair is bright red and she's wearing a short red top and a skirt and tall leather boots. She's wearing sunglasses and she's chewing gum.
Okay, how many bags are you checking through to Taipei?
Sydney is talking to the ticket agent.
Just a sweet. What lipstick to use? I love it.
Alex Jane Lux, Concord Grape.
Love it. Totally pops.
Thanks. May I see your passport?
You ever try this one? I think it's too light for me. What do you think?
It's pretty on you.
Thanks.
Window or aisle?
Sydney is sitting on the plane. Sydney gets off the plane in Taiwan and changes into an airport bathroom stall from the loud bright red outfit into something more spy-like. Something black. Sydney looks around to make sure that no one's watching, and she tries to pick the lock of one of the parked cars on the sidewalk. Another car parks a couple of meters away, and a guy gets out. Sydney stops picking the lock and casually leans against the car. The guy walks past her and rudely blows smoke in her face. Sydney looks annoyed and change of plans. Sydney is riding in the smoking guy's car. She parks near the large mansion we've seen before. Sydney puts on a black woolen hat and grabs her climbing gear out of the car. As she closes and locks the door, the camera focuses on a sticker on the car window, Jaguar Security System. It obviously failed when she stole it. Sydney is carefully approaching the wall that is surrounding the large mansion, and she successfully avoids the armed guards that are talking to each other and smoking a cigarette and not really paying all that much attention. Sydney is climbing the wall. She is on the roof and she is entering the building through the ventilation system. Sydney is in the ventilation ducts and there's a fan spinning below her. It's quite narrow and she can jam herself against the wall, between the wall, with her feet and back. Sydney slides out of the air ducts. She is now in a hallway on one of the lower floors in the mansion. She is climbing down some metal stairs and she's on the lower floor running through the hallway. She runs down some stairs and stops in front of the metal door and she starts to pick the lock again. She frowns, checks her lockpick, but it's not broken. She turns around. There was a guard with a gun and he knocks her out. Sydney with the red wig in a chair and she's waking up after the dentistry. The man with the glasses enters the room and he drags a metal chair next to Sydney's chair and sits down next to her.
The pill I gave you helps the pain. I could tell because you stopped screaming so loudly. That medication, however, only lasts for 2 hours. And it's been 2 hours almost. So, you have a choice. Which way we go next?
The man with the glasses holds out both hands. In his right hand, he's holding a bottle with pain medication. In his left hand, he's holding the dentistry tool.
Tell me, and you get one more.
Hinged.
Louder.
Like you.
Who do you work for?
The man with the glasses bends forward and is now very close to Sydney.
You pretty little girl.
Sydney headbutts him and he lands on the floor on his back. Sydney flips over so that she and the chair somersault through the air and she lands on top of the man with the glasses. Part of the chair is cutting off his air supply and when she kicks him in the head, he goes knockout. Sydney gets the keys out of the man's pocket and uncuffs herself. Sydney drags the man with the glasses upright in the chair and handcuffs him to it. Then she grabs a nearby device, I think it's kind of a floor mop without the mop part, and she breaks the wooden handle in half. by breaking it over the top of her leg. She picks up the dentistry tool and very slowly walks up to the man with the glasses, who now is terrified of her. She stabs him with the tool. The two uniformed men come running in, and Sydney kicks them and beats them with the long wooden broken-off handle. Both the uniformed guards are down. Sydney drops the handle and grabs their guns. On the computer monitors in the security room, you can see Sydney running through the hallway, and one of the guards now is talking into his walkie-talkie. Sydney, with a gun in each hand, is firing at the metal door that leads into the storage room. She kicks down the door and runs to the desk with the device on top of it. The device is called the Mueller device. Where previously the device was disassembled, now it is assembled, and there is a red blob floating and turning around and spinning in between the two metal C halves of the device, and it doesn't seem to be attached to anything. It's just spinning and floating in the air. The Mueller device is in a glass fish tank kind of thing with a metal door and lock on it. Sydney uses a fire extinguisher on the lock. I think the powder in the fire extinguisher is very cold, and that makes the metal brittle so that you can easily break it. She opens the door and she carefully disconnects the wires that are running to the device. I think it's running on electricity. As soon as Sydney disconnects the wire, the red blob turns into water, and, well, the water spills and is affected by gravity. Two armed military men in uniform are running through the hallway, presumably towards Sydney. Sydney very carefully takes the Mueller device out of the fish tank and she wraps it in some fabric. The two armed military men are entering the warehouse and Sydney fires at them. Sydney ducks as the guards fire back and there's broken glass flying around. Sydney is out of bullets. Sydney looks around and notices some small gas pipes running over the top of the desks. There also is a screwdriver. She uses her foot to flip the screwdriver off the desk while she still stays below the desks to keep out of the way of all the flying bullets. Using the screwdriver as leverage, she bends over one of the gas pipes and gas is now being released. Since Sydney is not firing guns anymore, the guards very carefully, slowly approach her. Sydney is hiding and the guards walk past her.
Hey guys.
Sydney stands up near the entrance of the warehouse. As soon as the guards fire back, the gas explodes. Sydney safely makes it out of the room. I'm guessing the guards weren't as lucky. And she now is running through the hallways and out of the building. She's holding the Mueller device under her arm. About 20 armed guards enter the kind of the lawn in front of the big mansion, and the floodlights are being turned on. And at the same time, Sydney scales the wall and gets back into the car she stole. No man's she kicks in the car's glass window, gets into the car, and drives away. No man's back in Los Angeles, shot of the outside of the bank near the sign reading Credit Dauphine.
Yeah.
Sloan is in his office, taking a call.
Send her in. Now. Yeah, make sure Ravel knows. My friends think I'm
alone, but I got secrets. Sydney, with bright red hair, the Mueller device on her arm, and a slightly bloody face, walks through the offices of SD6. Dixon is very surprised. Sydney enters Sloan's office and puts the Mueller device on his desk in front of him. I'm never tired of it, and I'm not scared of it, 'cause it doesn't cause me pain. Sloan unwraps the fabric and then looks up at her.
I'm back.
All right.
I'm taking the week off. I've got midterms. He never does me
harm, never treats me bad. Sydney walks out of Sloan's office. Then there's a shot of Sydney walking through a busy street with lots of other people. And then Sydney walks into a building. Take away all the love he has.
May I help you?
Sydney is standing at the front desk and a woman wearing a headset is helping her.
I need to speak to your director, Mr. Devlin.
I'm sorry, Mr. Devlin's not available. May I leave a message?
Tell him he has a walk-in.
Roxanne, we have a walk-in for Mr. Devlin. Come with me, please.
Sydney follows the woman, and as the camera zooms out, a large crest on the floor becomes visible. Central Intelligence Agency, United States of America. Michael Vaughn is walking through the CIA offices and he's carrying coffee and a bagel.
I'll get to it, I swear. Thanks.
Vaughn walks into a room where Sydney is sitting at a table and she is writing. Behind her, Weiss is leaning against the wall.
Some more coffee and something to eat. I'm just, let Mr. Weiss know if you need anything else.
New pen, this one's dying.
Thanks.
Sydney takes the new ballpoint pen and without a hesitation, she continues writing. Vaughn and Weiss look at each other briefly and Vaughn walks out. Later, Sydney is sitting in Vaughn's office. There's a picture on his desk with Vaughn and a blonde woman, and Sydney is feeling her teeth with her tongue and her mouth is hurting. Vaughn enters his office. He turns the image away from Sydney and sits down.
Well, this could be very interesting.
Does that mean I'm in?
No, not yet. They're reviewing your statement. You wrote a lot.
I know.
I mean, it's like Tolstoy long. Devlin says it could take weeks to verify. But I know we could use another double agent in SD6. So we'll be in contact. I'm going to get you right out of here, keep you concealed. Why are you shaking your head?
Because you said another.
So?
So if you really had one already, you most likely wouldn't tell me until I was authenticated.
Unless I had an instinct about you.
My bet is you don't have another double.
We might.
But you want me to believe that you do, so that on the off chance that I'm actually looking to be a triple agent, I'll report back that there's an existing mole to upset the balance of my agency.
I'm not trying to play you.
We'll see.
I have an instinct. Oh, you need a dentist. Do you have one? Because I can get you a name.
I'm all right.
I'll be right back.
Vaughn walks out. Sydney looks scared. At the cemetery. Sydney's hair is brown again, and she's laying flowers at Denny's grave. She has her hand on the top of the headstone and she's stroking it. The camera rotates around her and Jack Bristow is standing behind her. Sydney turns around and he walks up to her.
I wanted to say I was sorry.
You don't have to. I'm back at work. I guess you know that.
I meant sorry about Danny. There was nothing I could do.
I'd like to be alone, if you don't mind.
I know what it's like to lose someone.
Listen, I don't know what you expect. Just because we're working on the same side, just because I know the truth about you now, that doesn't change a thing between us. I accept what I'm doing now because I have to. It doesn't mean I have to accept you.
I asked Devlin if I could come tell you myself.
Jack takes a cell phone out of his pocket.
They verified your statement. You're in. I read what you wrote. I appreciate you not naming me. I was kind.
You're CIA.
You don't know how dangerous this is, Sydney. Doing what I do. I wish you'd taken me up on Switzerland.
How do I know what you're telling me is the truth?
I guess we'll just have to learn to trust each other. I need to know.
Sydney takes the cell phone and Jack walks away. And as the vision fades, I'll see I was blinded by your eyes. I felt the burn. I wanna get in bed. Sydney takes the call. End of episode 1. This episode was written by J.J. Abrams. You can visit my website at www.audiodescriptionpodcast.com. Welcome to the Modern Family Audio Description Podcast. Modern Family, Season 1, Episode 1.
Kids, breakfast! Kids!
A couple is making breakfast in the kitchen. Claire pokes her head around the door of the fridge to call the kids, and Phil is texting in the background.
Oh. Phil, would you get them?
Yeah, just a sec.
Claire gets the orange juice out of the fridge and puts it on the large countertop that's in the center of the kitchen. Phil, who is still texting and looking at his phone, opens the fridge door and grabs something out of it and then walks away again.
Kids!
Claire turns around and walks into the fridge door that Phil left open. She drops the bowl with cereal that she was holding.
That is so... Okay. Kids, get down here!
Why are you guys yelling at us when we're way upstairs? Just text me.
All right, that's not gonna happen, and wow, you're not wearing that outfit.
What's wrong with it?
Haley, who is also texting, appears from behind the kitchen counter. She is wearing an extremely short denim skirt.
Honey, do you have anything to say to your daughter about her skirt?
Phil glances up from his cell phone.
Sorry. Oh yeah, that looks really cute, sweetheart.
Thanks.
No, it's way too short. People know you're a girl. You don't need to prove it to them.
Luke got his head stuck in the banister again.
Alex walks in and opens the fridge.
I got it. Where's the baby oil?
It's our bedside tip. I don't know. Find it.
Claire hands Alex, who's passing by, a plate with breakfast and turns around to, again, walk into the open fridge door.
Come on.
Phil and Claire are sitting on the couch in their living room.
I was out of control growing up. There, you know, I said it.
There is white handwritten text on the screen. Above their head, it reads Phil and Claire, and below it reads Married 16 years.
I just don't want my kids to make the same bad mistakes I made. If Haley never wakes up on a beach in Florida half naked, I've done my job.
Our job.
Right. I've done our job.
Vamos,
he kick it, kick it! Don't let him kick it!
Outside in a park on a sunny afternoon, kids are playing a soccer game. Parents are sitting and standing on the sideline, and Gloria is cheering Manny on.
Manny, go! A la derecha, a la derecha! No! No, no!
She furiously throws her hands in the air.
He tripped him, Jay! Where is the penalty?
Gloria, they're 0-6. Let's take it down a notch.
Jay is sitting in a folding chair next to her, and he's extremely calm. Jay and Gloria are sitting on the couch in their living room. There is white handwritten text on the screen. Above their heads it reads, Jay and Gloria, and below it reads, Married 6 months.
Very different. Jay's from the city. He has a big business. I come from a small village. Very poor, but very, very beautiful. It's the number one village in all Colombia for all the... What's the word?
Murders.
Yes, the murders.
Manny was trying to kick the ball, but then a girl rides her bike past the field and he completely loses focus. Manny waves at the girl. The other team scores.
Damn it, Manny!
Come on, coach, you gotta take that kid out!
You wanna take him out?
Gloria turns her attention to the complaining parent.
How about I take you out?
Honey.
Why don't you worry about your son? He spent the first half with his hand in his pants.
The complaining mother walks away, and one of the dads stops next to Gloria.
I've wanted to tell her off for the last 6 weeks.
He takes off his sunglasses.
I'm Josh. Ryan's dad.
I am Gloria Pritchett, Manny's mother.
Oh, this must be your dad.
Her dad?
Yeah.
No, that's funny. Actually, no, I'm her husband. Don't be fooled by the,
Jay, who is wearing a red velour tracksuit, tries to get up out of the folding chair.
Give me a second here.
At the airport and then inside a plane, Mitchell is holding a little baby girl.
Who's a good girl?
Who's that?
Oh, she's adorable.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, precious.
Hello.
Mitchell takes Lily's hand and makes her wave at the old lady who is sitting on the other side of the aisle.
Hi.
We just adopted her from Vietnam, and we're bringing her home for the first time, huh?
Oh, she's an angel. You and your wife must be thrilled.
Sorry.
Daddy needed snacks.
Cameron, or Cam, arrives with 3 paper bags and a bunch of snacks in his other hand, and he sits down next to Mitchell.
Hi.
So, what are we talking about?
We have been together for...
Mitchell and Cam are sitting on the couch in their living room.
Five years now?
Cameron nods.
And we decided we really want to have a baby. So we had initially asked one of our lesbian friends to be a surrogate.
Then we figured they're already mean enough. Can you imagine one of them pregnant? No, thank you. Ick.
Look, you saw that, right?
Back on the plane.
Everybody fawning over Lily, and then you walk on, and suddenly it's all, ooh, SkyMall, I gotta buy a motorized tie rack. All right, you know, I'm gonna give the speech.
Mitchell hands Lily to Cam.
You are not giving the speech. What? You're going to be stuck with these people for the next 5
hours.
You're right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Honey.
A couple walks past them.
Look at that baby with those cream puffs.
Okay, excuse me, but this baby would have grown up in a crowded orphanage if it wasn't for us cream puffs. And you know what? No, to all of you who judge, hear this. Love knows no race, creed, or gender. And shame on you.
Mitchell.
You small-minded, ignorant few.
Mitchell.
What?
She's got the cream puffs.
Cameron is holding cream puffs.
Oh.
Mitchell sits down again. Cameron half stands up.
We would like to pay for everyone's headsets.
Buddy, why do you keep getting stuck like this?
Phil and Luke are on the stairs, and Phil is trying to free Luke, who has got his head stuck in between the banisters, and Phil is applying baby oil to Luke's head and hair and the stair banisters.
I thought I could get out this time.
I'm just gonna say it.
Alex comes down the stairs.
He needs to be checked by a specialist.
Ow!
There, be free, Excalibur.
I'm having a friend over today.
Who?
You don't know him.
Him?
Claire comes walking down the stairs with a laundry basket, and Haley walks up past her.
Him?
Ooh, a boy. You gonna kiss him?
Shut up.
Easy, easy.
Shut up. Don't even talk about it.
Alex, why don't you take it outside, okay?
And do what?
Fight in the sun. It'll be a nice change.
Haley.
I'm kidding.
Who's the boy?
His name is Dylan. You know, I might as well just tell him not to come because you guys are just going to embarrass me again.
Sweetie, hang on a second. You're 15 and it's the first time you've had a boy over. I mean, I'm bound to be a little surprised, but I'm not going to embarrass you.
I better go charge the camcorder.
I'm kidding. Come on. Who are you talking to?
Phil is sitting at the kitchen table.
I'm the cool dad. That's my thing.
He points at his cell phone.
I'm hip. I surf the web. I text. LOL. Laugh out loud. OMG. Oh my God. WTF. Why the face? You know, I know all the dances to High School Musical, so...
We're all in this together.
Phil in his living room. He's wearing a Letterman jacket and he's dancing.
Yes, we are. We're...
His three kids are sitting on the couch watching him. One is covering her eyes with a pillow, and the other two look horrified and shocked.
We're all stars, nothing, something, you know it.
Mom! Dad!
What happened?
Luke, just shot me!
Alex and Luke come rushing indoors. Alex is holding her arm, and Luke is carrying a BB gun.
I didn't mean to.
Are you okay?
No, the little bitch shot me!
Language!
They're only plastic BBs. It was an accident.
What did I tell you would happen if you got him a gun? Deal with this.
Buddy, uncool.
That's it? No. The agreement was that if he shoots someone, you shoot him.
We were serious about that?
Yes, we were, and now you have to follow through.
I'm so sorry.
Liar.
Luke immediately stops fake crying.
Go.
He's got a birthday party.
What's more important here, Dad?
You can shoot him afterwards. He'll be home at 2.
I can't shoot him at 2. I'm showing a house at 2.
What about 3?
No, he's got a soccer game at 3, and then we gotta leave for that dinner thing at 5.
There is a calendar taped to the wall in the kitchen, and they all gather around it.
4:15. You could shoot him at 4:15.
Yeah, I guess that works for me.
Shoot Luke.
Sorry, dude. It's on the calendar.
Oh, come on.
The football game is over, and everyone is walking to their car.
I'm quitting soccer. It is a game for children.
No, you're not quitting. You would have stopped that goal if you weren't staring at the little girl.
She is not a girl. She's a woman.
Gloria rolls her eyes, and they get in the car. Jay is driving, Gloria is in the passenger seat, and Manny is in the back.
You know, Gloria, that will blow up with another mom. Why do you have to do
things? If somebody
like that?
Says something about my family,
I'm just saying, you could take it down here a little bit, that's all.
Well, yeah, because that's where you live, down here, but I live up here.
You don't have to be so emotional all the time, that's all I'm saying. Manny, you're with me on this, right?
I want to tell Brenda Philman I love her.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Manny, she's 16.
Oh, it's okay for you to take an order, lover?
Hey, watch it.
I want to go to the mall where she works, but first I need to get my white shirt, the silk one.
Okay, that's what you really want to do?
Seriously, not to be the evil stepdad, but if you put on a puffy white shirt and declare your love for a 16-year-old, you're going to be swinging from the flagpole in your puffy white underpants.
Stop the car!
Well, where are you going?
Jay stops and Manny gets out.
You see? You heard these feelings.
Yeah, well, if it toughens them up a little bit, then... Oh, jeez, he's picking flowers.
Manny's very passionate.
Gloria and Jay are sitting on the couch in their living room.
Just like his father. My first husband, he's very handsome, but too crazy. It seemed like all we did was fight and make love, fight and make love, fight and make love. One time, I'm not kidding you, we fell out the window together.
Which one were you doing? I'm hearing this for the first time.
This doesn't worry you?
Mitchell, Cam, and Lily are coming home.
She barely slept on the plane, and she's still wide awake.
Oh, stop worrying.
Hey, Cam, that orphanage, it was all women. Maybe she can't fall asleep unless she feels a woman's shape.
Well, I guess that's possible.
So here.
Mitchell hands Lily and the baby carrier to Cam.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Yes, I've gained a few extra pounds while we were expecting the baby.
I think most people would describe Cameron as kind of a teddy bear. He's a little chubby, he's carrying a little extra weight, especially around the middle.
Which has been very difficult, but apparently your body does a nesting, very maternal, primal thing where it retains nutrients.
Night vision camera shot of Cameron midnight snacking in the pantry.
Some sort of molecular physiology thing. But that's science. You can't fight it. So.
Not saying anything.
You're saying everything.
Count to three.
One,
three.
Two, okay.
Cameron walks into the baby room and Mitchell and Lily follow.
Oh, Cam.
Oh, my God, do you love it?
Yes.
The walls are painted pink, and it's all very pretty and girly and pastel. And then Mitchell turns around.
What the hell is that?
I had Andre do it while we were gone.
There is a mural painted on the wall with Cameron and Mitchell painted as naked angels on a cloud with cloth covering parts of their bodies.
Is that us with wings?
We're floating above her, always there to protect her.
Okay, well, that's reassuring, right, Lily? Yes, we tore you away from everything you know, but don't worry, things are normal here. Your fathers are floating fairies. Now, can you call Andre? Have him paint something a little less gay? By the way, we need to stop having friends with names like Andre.
Cameron bends closer to Lily.
Redheaded Dad is angry, Daddy.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Even Pepper pointed it out on the way home from the airport.
Okay, and that's another one, Pepper.
Yeah. Okay, what's up?
All right, look, I never told my family we were adopting a baby. And
I know.
You do?
Yeah, and I don't blame you. I know your family. You'd tell them. They'd say something judgmental.
Exactly.
You'd get mad.
I know, and then something that's supposed to be nothing but joyful suddenly turns into this huge fight.
And who wants a big emotional scene like that?
Thank you. I'm so relieved you understand.
I invited them over for dinner tonight.
What?
I had to. This would have gone on forever. You're an avoider.
No, Cam, I'm calling them right now. I'm canceling.
No, you're not. You're telling your family you adopted a baby tonight, and you do have avoidance issues. Even Longinus said so.
Are you really not hearing these names?
Don't answer it, I'll get it!
A guy is ringing the doorbell, and both Haley and Claire are rushing to the door to open it. Claire wins.
Hi, hey, you must be Dylan.
Hey, Dylan, yeah.
I'm Haley's mother.
Hey.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, let's go.
Okay,
Haley quickly drags Dylan upstairs, and Claire grabs his sleeve.
Hang on one second. Dylan, you're still in high school?
Yeah, I'm a senior.
A senior, okay, cool. Hey, Phil, sweetie, honey, he is Dylan, and he is a senior.
Let me meet this player. Phil Dunphy, yo.
Phil walks up to Dylan and holds out his fist for a fist bump. Nothing happens. Phil is sitting at the kitchen table and he is staring at the camera.
It's like that. You just stare down at him, let the eyes do the work. Your mouth might be saying, hey, we cool, but your eyes are like, no, we not.
He alternately points at his mouth and then at his eyes.
Nice to meet you. No, it's not. It's all good. Snow is, isn't it?
Yo.
Back on the stairs.
Okay, I've seen
wait.
You guys.
You too.
Phil walks up a few steps and looks at Dylan, and then he takes a few more steps up so that he's actually taller.
You two keep it real. Know what I mean, son?
Not really.
Please stop.
That's cool.
Phil tries to casually lean on the banister, but his hand slips and he grabs his back.
Oh, God, honey. That's my back!
Sweetheart.
Ow! Oh, I slipped in the baby oil.
Back to Phil at the kitchen table.
Oh, where are you from originally?
I could defeat you if it came to a physical confrontation.
I don't know about this.
Dylan is carrying Phil to the couch. Claire and Haley follow.
Should I call a doctor?
No. Okay. You're very strong, Holmes.
Thanks.
Okay, nice. Nice soft landing.
Dylan gently lowers Phil, and then everybody starts to walk away.
There you go.
Okay.
I am on my side, though, so just flip me right back, and we're good.
Ugh.
We'll be good. I just need to get flipped right on my back, and we should be fine, so...
Gloria, Manny, and Jay are in the mall. There's stairs leading up between two floors, and halfway there's kind of a platform, and they are standing there overlooking the mall.
Brenda Feldman.
The girl who was riding her bike past the soccer field is standing in front of a photo fun booth. And Manny is standing on the platform thingy, and he's holding a piece of paper and the flowers he picked. He is wearing his white shirt.
What is that?
A poem I've written for Brenda Feldman.
Of course it is.
I put my thoughts into words, and now my words into action.
Hey, I'll give you $50 not to do this.
I'm 11 years old. What am I going to do with money?
What are you going to do with a 16-year-old?
It's not a bullfighter.
Manny runs away.
Never see a bullfight? I can't watch this.
You're in such a bad mood, and I know why. It's because that man thought you were my father.
Oh.
Yes.
No.
When you say no like that, it's always yes. Come on, we're in the mall. Let's get you like some younger clothes. There's a store there that I
don't need any younger clothes. And I don't care what some jackass in a pair of ripped jeans thinks about me.
Good. You shouldn't. You should only care what I think. And I love you, and I don't care how old you are. So stop being a gloomy goose and stop being so hard on Manny.
The only reason I'm hard on Manny is just because I don't want to see him make a fool of himself. And I can smell that hair goo of his from here.
They're both looking down at Manny, and he is reading his poem to the girl.
Look, I don't know what's going to happen to him over there, but you're his family now. And that means only one thing. You'll be the wind in his back, not the spit in his face.
What?
Something my mom always says is gorgeous in Spanish. Look, he's there.
Manny slowly comes walking back, and both Jay and Gloria meet him on the first floor.
She has a boyfriend.
Oh, I'm sorry, mi niño.
I gave her my heart. She gave me a picture of me as an old-time sheriff.
Manny shows them the picture. It's him with a photoshopped cowboy head and a fake mustache.
That was pretty stupid of me, wasn't it?
No, mi amor. It was brave, right, Jay? Brave.
Yeah, well, you'll know better next time. Come on, let's get a pretzel.
Jay walks away. Gloria glares at his back and cuddles Manny.
Mentira, mi si me gusta.
Oh, excuse me, sir. We ask that all mall walkers stay to the right.
Jay is on his way to the pretzels when a mall cop stops him. And then a group of senior citizens in velour tracksuits power walks past. Jay looks at his own tracksuit and then walks into the first ripped jeans clothes store he comes across. Claire is baking something in the kitchen.
Mom!
Alex, leave your sister alone!
I was just getting my book, gosh.
I know, sweetie, but you need to respect their privacy. What are they doing up there?
Nothing. Lying in her bed watching a movie.
Okay. Okay. I'm making a cake for tonight. You want to help me with the frosting?
Sure. So,
You know, if Haley got pregnant, would you ever pretend she has mono for a few months and then, like, tell everyone the baby's yours?
What?
The senior at school was out sick for, like, 4 months, but Jenna Resnick swears she's there breastfeeding at a coin-op car wash.
Claire is starting to look increasingly worried. Outside in the garden, Phil is carrying the BB gun.
Buddy.
Luke is wearing a thick winter coat, safety glasses, and four hats. He looks like the Michelin Man.
What are you wearing?
Nothing.
No jacket. One hat. How many pairs of underwear do you have on?
One. Six.
Luke throws off his hats. Back in the kitchen. Alex is stirring the frosting.
First of all, it would be really cool to see Haley that fat, and how awesome would it be to have a fake little brother who's really my nephew.
Haley is not getting pregnant.
Just saying if.
I know, and I know you like to make trouble for your sister, but it's not going to work this time. You know why? Because your sister's a good girl. I know. I was just like her when I was...
Claire suddenly looks a little panicky, and she rushes away.
I want you to know, I'm not enjoying this, but this is an important lesson that you're learning, so soak it, keep it.
Phil is standing a few feet away from Luke, and he slowly raises the BB gun.
You're too close. It's gonna hurt.
It's supposed to hurt.
And why are you smiling?
I'm... What?
Claire walks up the stairs with some laundry. She briefly pauses in front of Haley's bedroom door. In the garden, Phil is taking aim.
Oh, forget it. I can't do this. The point is, you're scared. I think you've learned your lesson. Wow.
Ow!
The BB gun goes off, and Phil shoots Luke in his arm. Claire opens Haley's door without knocking and comes walking in.
Mom?
Oh.
What are you doing?
Hey, I was just dropping off some laundry. Is this a bad time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can you shut the door, please?
Actually, we're just gonna go ahead and leave that open.
Why?
Because I have seen this little show before, lying on the bed with a tall senior. One minute you're just friends watching Falcon Crest, and the next you're lying underneath the air hockey table with your bra in your pocket.
Whoa.
Mom!
Back outside.
You hit my bone!
It was an accident!
I thought you were my friend!
I am your friend!
Dad? Dad, you have got to talk to Mom. She is, like, completely freaking out and embarrassing me.
Well, honey, your mom isn't always as cool about things as... Ow! What is with this thing? Ow!
Haley was standing on the balcony and Dylan joined her. Phil first accidentally shot Dylan, then he dropped the BB gun and it accidentally shot him in the foot.
My dad still isn't completely comfortable with this.
Cam and Mitchell on the couch in their living room, and Mitchell is gesturing at them as a couple.
He still does this thing. It's been 5 years now, and he still does this thing where he announces himself before walking into any room we're in, just to make sure he doesn't have to ever see us kiss.
Yeah. Wish my mother had that system. Remember?
Not now. I still can't believe you did this to me.
Would you get in the spirit of things? It's a celebration.
Cam and Mitchell are setting the table for dinner.
Oh, God.
Okay. I'm gonna go get Lily ready.
Okay.
And I want you to just come straight out with it.
All right.
Okay? You can do this.
Yeah.
Sports guy chest bump.
No.
Sports guy chest bump.
Cam.
Oh, do it.
All right.
Go.
Cool.
Sorry.
Oh.
Claire, Phil, and the kids come in, and Phil hands Mitchell a bottle of wine.
Hi,
hey guys.
Hey. Looks good.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
Oh, don't thank us. Open it. Dad is coming right behind.
Look, we're here. Coming in.
Don't worry, Dad. Nothing gay going on here. May I take your multicolored coat and bejeweled cap?
Yeah.
Jay is wearing the outfit he bought at the mall.
Hey.
Hey, Jay.
Gloria. Hi.
How are you? Hi,
Dylan. Hi, Gloria.
How are you?
Oh, a beautiful dress.
I thank you, Phil.
Okay.
Phil feels the fabric of the dress on Gloria's hip.
No, wait, Phil. So she says Phil, not feel.
Huh.
Claire slaps his hand away and drags him to a corner.
Phil.
So how was your trip?
It was good. It was good, actually. But about that, I have something that I need to tell you guys. We didn't just go to Vietnam for pleasure. We kind of have some big news.
Oh, God. If Cam comes out here with boobs, I'm leaving.
Dad? I hope he didn't embarrass you, Mom.
Oh, don't mind her. Haley had her first boy over today, and Phil shot him.
Anyway, so about a year ago, Cam and I started feeling this longing, you know, for something more, like maybe a baby.
Ooh, that's a bad idea.
What do you mean, bad idea?
Well, kids need a mother. I mean, if you two guys are bored, get a dog.
Okay, we're not bored, Dad.
I support you, Mitchell, even though you're not my son.
I think what Dad is trying to say is that, Mitchell, you're a little uptight. Kids bring chaos, and you don't handle it well.
Oh, that's not what Dad's saying. That's what you're saying, and it's insulting in a whole different way.
Okay, people, let's all chillax.
Hey, where's Uncle Cameron?
Fine, thank you. Thank you. Someone who's not insulting me notices he's not here.
Oh, so that's the big announcement, huh? You two broke up. Well, a baby wasn't going to help that anyway. And you know, let me tell you, you're a little better off because he was a bit of a drama queen.
No, stop. No, you come into my house and you insult me and my boyfriend, who, by the way, is not that dramatic. And oh, God.
The lights dim and Cameron walks into the room in a red African robe and he is carrying Lily. The music changes and he holds Lily up, presenting her to the crowd just like that monkey did in The Lion King, and a spotlight appears on Lily's face.
We adopted a baby. Her name is Lily.
Oh, exciting!
Just turn it off.
I can't turn it off, it's who I am.
The music.
Oh, yes, the music. Come say hi to Lily.
She's a little princess.
You're so cute.
Let me see her.
Hi, Lily.
Oh.
Lily, isn't that going to be hard for her to say?
Excuse me. Okay, I know that I said I thought this was a bad idea. But what do I know? I mean, it's not like I wrote the book on fatherhood. Been trying all my life to get it right. I'm still screwing up. Right, Manny?
I wrote a song about it in the car.
Of course you did. Anyway, I'm happy for you. And you should know that I'm not here to spit in your face. I'm here to blow at your back.
I don't understand what that means.
It's supposed to sound better in Spanish.
Voy a ser la brisa en tu espalda, no quien te escupa en la frente.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Anyhow, Mitch.
No, Dad, it's...
Oh,
I got it.
She wants
her grandpa.
Do you want to meet grandpa?
Oh, you're kidding? She's one of us now. Let me see a little pot sticker. Hey, you're a cutie, aren't you? Look at this. We're from different worlds, yet we somehow fit together. Love is what binds us through fair or stormy weather. I stand before you now with only one agenda. To let you know my heart is yours, Feldman, Brenda.
Jay is sitting on the couch in his living room, and he is reading Manny's poem.
I mean, seriously.
Phil is sitting at his kitchen table.
Luke, so far, you know, hasn't beaten me in basketball.
It's 2-0.
In the backyard, there's a trampoline with a net around it, and on the edge of the trampoline, there's the basketball hoop. Phil does not have to jump to be able to reach the hoop. He also is at least twice as tall as Luke is, so not really a fair game. Luke is trying and doing his best, but Phil steals the ball and dunks it.
2-0.
Get that moving stuff out of my kitchen.
Can you do me a favor, just grab? How's the weather down there?
But when the day comes that he does, when, if, you know, if when, he beats me, I'm just going to be like, well done, well done. Just, like, let him, just support him in that kind of stuff. I mean, I probably want to just go, like, 2 out of 3 and just see what happens there, but.
Back to the basketball game in the yard. Phil dunks and the ball bounces over the net, over the hedge, into the neighbor's yard. End of episode 1. For more information, you can visit the website at www.audiodescriptionpodcast.com, and my email address is info@audiodescriptionpodcast.com. That is audiodescriptionpodcast.com, and my name is Corinne, that is spelled Corien.